Welcome to Beyond the Arc. I'm Phil Nasis. He's Kevin Leip, and we're here to talk Memphis Grizzlies basketball with you tonight. Kevin, what's happening? How are you?
I'm hanging in there, just like the Memphis Grizzlies.
They are hanging in there, and just like Memphis Flyers hanging in there. And they hang in there with us and present this show for you to enjoy every week, and a lot of you do. Even though the Grizzlies are in trouble, they still listen, Kevin. They listen to this show anyway.
It's the only one worth listening. It's really the only podcast worth listening to.
I would think so. Well, I haven't had a chance to listen to the other one yet over at Commercial Appeal, but it doesn't really matter because this is the best one. It just is. Been here for a long time, too. This is number 95.
It's crazy that we've been doing that this long.
Yeah, but if we weren't so jinxed, we would probably be like at 135, right? Or 125 at least.
And if you didn't have your, you know, fancy summer retreats.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, forgive me for that. I need the summer retreat away from Twitter and the Twittiacy and the Twittiots. I have to stay away from them sometimes. I'm trying to get on your blog, but you don't write anymore. I really knocked myself out last night. I came up with some good stuff.
I know. I am.
It's all good. You got things going on, but it's hard to write about a team that's lost 15 in a row.
That's really what it is. I mean, there's just nothing to say. I mean, what?
How many ways can you say they're not very good?
They're not very good, and some of the young guys are good, and some of them aren't, and they're not very good, and they didn't win.
And that's it.
It's just, there's nothing you can say. I mean, the draft isn't really that interesting. There's like five guys that are going to be the top five guys, and they all have their pros and cons, and
right,
you know, I still love Doncic, but he's probably not going to be there. I bet the Grizzlies won't pick him, and even if they get the number one pick, they probably won't pick him.
They should, but they won't.
Yeah, they should. The most Grizzlies pick out there is Michael Porter because he's injured. There's just nothing to say.
There is nothing to say. There's not an impact player coming out of this draft. I don't care what anybody says, or I should say an immediate impact. I don't see it. But then, whatever. You know what, though? We're going to come up with some good stuff for them today because our one listener still deserves for us to try to be positive. And I'll tell you what, I'm still getting really ticked off about how some people are treating Grizzlies fans who really just want to see their team win, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's just idiocy there. I don't get it. Leave them alone. If they're unhappy that the team loses or they're excited because they take a halftime lead, let them be.
Yeah, I don't get the whole, there's such a like superiority complex coming, like the Twitter people who were saying they should tank before they were even bad.
Right.
Are really kind of rubbing it in the faces of the people who wish they would try to win every game. And the people who try to win every game are,
not happy because they're getting abused.
Well, that and, you know, there's also this kind of element of, it's ruining the integrity of the game and they should be ashamed and this kind of stuff. And it's like, you know, ultimately losing games is the best thing they can do right now. I mean, that doesn't make it fun, right? Those two things aren't mutually exclusive. It's not fun to watch this team right now. I wouldn't be upset if I paid money to go see them play right now. I think a lot of sports writers have a hard time keeping in perspective that, you know, they get to go to these games for free and everyone else doesn't. It's like a fun night out for them. And so if it's a fun night out and they're getting beat by 20 by some crappy team, well, that's not a fun night out.
No, it's not. And you take your kids there or you go not just to see the Grizzlies, but maybe you want to see a famous player like LeBron James and then they don't play because the Grizzlies are bad and they don't need him or whatever. And that's just tough. But what three things have we learned about the Grizzlies? Let's take it one at a time. Go ahead. You want to go first? You want me to go first?
I can go first.
Oh, good. I can't wait to hear. What's one thing that you learned about the Grizzlies this season?
I learned that Dylan Brooks is a rotation NBA player.
Yeah, that's a good one there. I recommended him at DraftKings the other day because I couldn't find anybody else. Because I have this requirement, you know, they have to be $5,000 or cheaper. And it's not easy sometimes to find those kind of guys. But Dylan Brooks has played good. I like what you say about him. Go ahead. Continue on about Dilly Dilly.
Yeah, well, he had a great night against the Bulls, so that was a good pick for you. I just think he's shown a real poise, and there have not been many Grizzlies rookies that have come out of the gate and made an impact like him immediately, right? I mean, he was playing from the first part of the season, and he's only gotten better. I don't think he's ever going to be like an all-star, but you don't have to be to make millions of dollars. You just have to be a rotation player, and that's what he is, right? He comes in, he makes hustle plays, he gets you good buckets, he can shoot, he can take it off the bounce if he needs to, he can get to the rim. He's just going to make hustle plays for you. He's a very valuable player. I mean, he reminds me a lot of Shane Battier. He's not as good, anywhere near as good of a defender as Battier was.
Right.
But he's that same kind of like utility guy. He just comes in and makes things happen.
I like him because he's got some energy, and you can see he tries. And one of the things that I've learned about this particular Memphis Grizzlies team is they don't quit.
Not all of them do.
Not all of them. I mean, the young guys. I ain't talking about Marcus Hall. I've already traded him, by the way. So
that's true.
But here's the thing. You know what I saw today? Well, first of all, I think Steve Clifford is on his way out of Charlotte. They got blown out by the Brooklyn Nets tonight. And yikes. I think that's the end for him at home, by the way. Kemba Walker was another no-show. I don't know what's happening there, but I opined on Facebook today. I didn't want to go over and get harassed by the Twitty-its. I think Steve Clifford would be the next coach of the Memphis Grizzlies if it's not David Blatt.
I think it would make sense. He's certainly a good coach. He's a very kind of defensive-minded, pretty gritty coach. Mm-hmm. Really a Lionel Hollins type in a lot of ways. But I think maybe a little better with players than Hollins was, better with kind of ego players than Hollins was.
That's fair, but what do you think of him? Because, he's got his roots in Maine, Steve Clifford.
Yeah, I think Steve Clifford's a really good coach. I think the Hornets / Bobcats, I guess he was their coach when they were still the Bobcats, right? I think he's had them kind of playing over their head for the last couple of years.
Yeah, he was the coach then, yeah, sure.
And it's a lot of it is their defensive scheme. I mean, they've been such a good defensive team the last couple of years. I really like him. I like the way his teams play. I think he can put together a solid, I think he can put together a solid strategy for how to approach a season, right? And that's the thing that, I mean, David Fizdale proved. Not every coach can do that.
Not every coach can do that. Putting right people in the right spots. Yeah, I mean, that takes a little bit of experience. I saw Becky Hammon's name out there too today.
Yeah, and was that Mullinex that was talking about that?
That was Joe Mullinex from Grizzly Bear Blues, our old friend. And he opined that. I opined that a few seasons ago for the Thunder to hire her. But I'm going to say this. Let me just say this. That will not work in Memphis. And I'm going to tell you why. Not that she's not a good coach. I think she'd be great. But I don't know how she's going to get along with Marc Gasol.
Yeah, that's part of it. I mean, I think she may have some cred coming from the Spurs.
Yeah, but guys don't like to take orders from women in Europe.
Marc Gasol doesn't like to take orders from anybody unless apparently, he decides he wants to take orders from
them. Well, apparently not. Yes, this is why I've traded him already.
I think that would be interesting to see. I mean, I think the thing that would rule her out for me is just I don't think they're going to take another chance on a first-time coach. I mean, I think if they're not going to hire J.B. Bickerstaff, they're going to go after somebody experienced. They're not going to – I just don't – I think Fizdale – they cut bait with him so quickly, and that was such a black eye for them that I really don't think they're going to go after a first-year coach that may not work out again.
I don't either. I don't think Bickerstaff's going to be there either. If he were, through all this tanking, they would have given him a contract.
I think. Yeah, I think that's so much of that goes back to the ownership stuff. I think they're just not doing anything for next season right now.
Well, whatever. Well, give me another thing you learned about the Memphis Grizzlies this season.
Let's see.
It's hard, I know.
I learned that Chris Wallace should not be a general manager anymore.
Oh, dude. That was my number two also, but not the same way. I wrote it a little different, but go ahead. And then I'll share what I said.
I mean, I think you just look at number one, Chandler Parsons is on the team. I still understand why they did that deal, but there were too many red flags around it. I wouldn't do it again.
Right. Well, they might.
Ben McLemore was the first guy they signed in free agency. They're paying him $5 million a year this year and $5 million a year next year, and he's unplayable. They signed him before they signed Tyreek Evans.
Yeah, right. They did. They did
not trade Tyreek Evans at the deadline, and apparently, I don't know this. This is just speculation that they probably have some kind of, you know, backdoor gentleman's agreement that they're going to sign him this summer, because that's the way Chris Wallace does things. He does things on a handshake. They've made too many bad moves, and you can tell these second round guys that they're getting. That's probably Hollinger because his draft rating stuff is evolved far beyond what it was at ESPN, right?
Right.
And so he's able to just kind of pick these guys out of the late first round, early second round. But I don't like any of the moves the Grizzlies have made outside of drafting Brooks and Rab. I like picking Deontay Davis. I don't like any of the moves they've made in the last 3 years. I mean, they carried 20 guys on guaranteed deals all the way through the preseason. No one does that.
Who does that?
The Grizzlies.
Oh, yeah. You know what mine is? I wrote this out because this is going to fall right in to finish what you were saying, I'm sure. Chris Wallace might be the worst GM in Grizzlies history.
They haven't had that many GMs, and that's a pretty tall order. But I do think, he did build something good.
He did
put together a good team that was kind of responsible for the success of the team in their most successful period. But he also has just run it into the ground. I don't like any of the moves they've made basically since re-signing Gasol and Conley. I mean, outside of that, I don't like anything they've done in like 3 years.
I think that's right. Wow, somebody got hurt for Boston. I can't tell. I think it's Jaylen Brown. I think he got really hurt. But, I'm sorry. I got sidetracked. I was listening and watching a little bit. You know what? I don't like anything that he's done either. Whatever. You know what? He's not going to be there next season, I hope.
You know, you would think so. I mean, I think even people who would be Chris Wallace defenders or who think he's done a fine job, I think would agree that, I mean, just the Chris Wallace era has kind of run its course.
Thank goodness. Hopefully. Yeah, there was Jaylen Brown. He dunked the ball and he got something caught up and he just broke something. He landed almost on his head.
Oh
my God, it's sick. They got Kyrie Irving is sitting on the bench with a towel over his face, biting into it because it's so ugly what we just saw. I'm sorry, folks. I didn't mean to get distracted like that. But at the end of the day, this is a very bad team, but we have learned some things. And I think the third thing, this is what I've learned, is that Marc Gasol doesn't care about this team or this organization, and he should be traded. He should be ashamed of himself, really.
I think I'm not going to go that hard on him because I think he talked a big game about wanting to win, but knew all along what was going on and knew they would be terrible.
Right.
I think we've seen him be put in a position by the organization where he had to be the one explaining a lot of things. He had to explain why the defense wasn't working. He had to explain what was happening. I think it's kind of a no-win situation. I think he's had an impossible workload to carry this year, and at the same time, he has not carried it well.
No, but here's the thing: he's supposed to be the leader of this basketball team, and he's the captain of this team. And okay, it's Mike's team, but it's not right now. Mike is sitting on the sidelines, giggling with Chandler Parsons and everybody else he can laugh with. It's time to clean house. I've decided they all need to go now. This is disappointing to me. 15 straight losses. And it, what is worse is that if you try to trade Marc Gasol and you're a savvy GM, not like the one the Grizzlies have, you're going to, or like a Thunder GM. They don't pay attention to basketball much. You can tell. But the thing is you watch him run down the floor and he doesn't care. And you see him set a pick, but he doesn't really set one. And then he gets in the ball and down in the block and he can't get the ball. Obviously, that's not his fault that they don't have anyone who can pass the ball to him. But his whole demeanor, his body language, and I understand everything that you said, but it's time to say adios to Marc Gasol.
I think
I'm getting in trouble.
Well, no, I don't. This may surprise you, but I don't think that's an unreasonable position at all. I mean, I think they finally reached a point with him where they can decide to keep him or they can decide to move him. And either way, there's an argument in favor of it. Right.
Right.
I think, and that's not been true about it before, I don't think. So if they're going to move him, if they didn't move him at the deadline, I get why they didn't. If they're going to move him, it's got to be this summer. I mean, he's not going to have any value past this summer as a trade piece. It's going to have to be this summer if they're going to move him. So I think, you know, we keep coming back to this ownership thing, and it's annoying because there's really not anything new to say about it. But
well, I know that's why I didn't ask you about that for that other thing, because there's nothing to say.
Yeah. But if there is some sort of change on the basketball side, right? If there is a new GM or if there is new basketball leadership under new ownership, like that's the first decision they have to make. Whoever is in charge of basketball is, what do we do about Marc Gasol? Do we keep him or do we trade him? And Conley too, although Conley's trade value is probably totally shot because he's, you know, played 100 games in 3 seasons. I think that's what has to be decided. Do we go all the way and get rid of both of these guys and really start over? Or do we try to keep something going for another 2-3 years? Right now, I think they're going towards the latter, but I don't necessarily know that that's the right decision.
See, that's where I'm sitting right now. I it's not that I want to get rid of them, but I don't think the Grizzlies have a choice. And if they don't bring in a real GM, they have to bring me in, and I would clean house. Just letting you know, folks, I would do that. But
the realest GM. You would be keeping it too real.
Let me tell you this. Oh yes, and here's the thing: the local media would love me because I would give them sound bites every day.
You would do that.
I guarantee you, I would. You think Marc Gasol called a private meeting? I'd have you guys out there every day, and I would feed you too. Not unlike some GMs who don't want to do that. Never mind. Anyway. But here's, what was the third thing that you learned about the Grizzlies this year?
The third thing I learned about the Grizzlies is that the fan base is not as deep as they thought they were.
A good call. Bravo.
You know, it's hard to be a fan of a bad team. It's not that fun. I've been a New Orleans Saints fan my whole life. I know all about being a fan of a bad team. Right. You know, you can't see through the microphone, but got a lot of Cincinnati Red stuff in this room. Bad teams are no fun. It's not fun to pull for a bad team.
No, I know. You're talking to a Knicks fan.
That's true. At least they pretend to be good.
And a Mets fan. And a Jets fan.
So what you're saying is you have some kind of mental illness.
That's already, we already know this. I mean, but, thanks for pointing it out.
True. You agree to talk to me once a week.
And then you agree to talk to me. This is why this show is a hit. Now, here's the thing, though. Go ahead. I'm sorry, because this is a hard show to do because it's tough to talk about. I have never talked about the Memphis Grizzlies 15 losses in a row.
Yeah. No, and I haven't either. They haven't been this bad since well before I covered this team.
I know.
They're Vancouver bad this year, right? They were maybe this bad in like 2002, 2003.
They were pretty bad.
It's been a long time since they've been this bad.
Ooh, big country bad.
Well, big country never made it to Memphis. I'm thinking like Michael Dickerson bad.
Oh, remember him? Michael Dickerson. Didn't he go to UCLA?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
This is like, oh, we don't have Sharif Abdur-Rahim anymore, and we have rookie Pau Gasol. Bad.
Yeah, they were awful. The laughing stock of the NBA.
I am looking over my shoulder at a Stromile Swift bobblehead right now.
Wow, that's history there. Stromile Swift.
I'll send you a picture. But
I need that.
Yeah, I just, you know, the fans, so they've been good for 7 years in a row. They've made the playoffs, and the fans here got a little cocky about how good Grizzlies fans are and how loyal and how tough they are. And look, they're just like any other fair weather fan base, right? I mean, Sacramento Kings have been garbage for 15 years, and they sell out every game. Grizzlies fans are not on that level.
No. That's tough, though, man. It's tough for them. And I see that now. What did we learn about the NBA? Three things we learned about the NBA.
Number one is big men are going to be extinct in about 5 years.
Wow, that's a good call. Why do you say that?
I just, when I say big men, I mean even guys like Marc Gasol, right? Like there's just, the game is moving so far outside now that you can basically put a guy that would have been a small forward 3 years ago in at the four and play your, like, what used to be a stretch four as your five, and you're good to go, right?
Right.
You might need rim protection. You might not. If you can just shoot over the defense like Houston does, you don't even really need rim protection. Threes count more than twos. Threes, I just think the game is evolving in a way that I don't really like, honestly.
Three for me, two for you. That's what they call it. Yeah, I remember listening to Mike D'Antoni on Sirius last year, Sirius NBA channel, and he was talking to Sam Mitchell. And Sam Mitchell said something to him, and he said, you know what my dream is, Sam? That my team shoots 100 three-pointers in a game, and I think I can do it. And Sam says, where can you sign me up? I would love to play. Because he didn't like, you know, he shot a lot of threes too. He liked to shoot the ball. And I think that you're right. I think it's turned into that. I want to say that the big man is still going to be relevant, but it's the guy, the Karl Anthony Towns type of big man, the swing five, the stretch five, I guess you want to call it now, who shoots three-pointers and doesn't really rebound and doesn't really protect the rim. And I don't know. But I learned things too, but it wasn't really what I learned. It was what was reinforced for me. So get ready for this. You ready? The NBA likes to interfere with basketball operations of other teams.
Absolutely.
And randomly, you know, without any just real reason. Look what they did with the Bulls. The Bulls have a young team. They had Zach LaVine, who missed 3/4 of the season. They want to play their young guys. And why not? I mean, they're not the worst team in the NBA, and they're not trying to be. And the NBA sticks their nose in there where it don't belong and tells them, hey, you got to play Chris Dunn and you got to play Justin Holiday and you got to play Robin Lopez. No, you don't. They didn't do that with the Spurs when the Spurs did it. So, I mean, what's the deal here? Is it only the upper crust, the elite, that get that treatment, and the golden boys that get that treatment, or should they be more fair?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I mean, I think it's weird that they picked the Bulls to mess with there when the Suns have been, like, intentionally drawing plays for bad players and stuff like that all year long.
Or Dennis Schroeder taking he needs a three to tie, and instead comes out of the timeout and drives straight to the rack, and he just took the layup because everyone was stunned except for Budenholzer.
Yeah, I mean, the Grizzlies got an 8-second violation on the last possession of the game last night. You know what I mean? Like, when was the last time an NBA player got an 8-second violation like that?
I can't remember when. It's probably never happened.
Like on an important play in a game. I mean, it's so blatant this year that it's weird that they picked on the Bulls. And I also think it's just, I am not anti-tanking. I understand why the Grizzlies are doing it, and I think they're doing it in a careful way. You know, I think they're doing it because they really do have all these young guys that need minutes, and they need to figure out who's going to be on the team next year. But at the same time, like, think you said this before we got on the air, there's like a third of the league has 15 wins right now.
Yeah, a third of the league is playing
19 wins.
Yeah, one third of the league is below 400 or 40% wins. That's not good. What do you do with a team like Orlando, Kevin? Kevin, Orlando's been a dumpster fire for years. No one says anything to them.
Yeah, I think you contract them is what you do.
I think. Poor Frank Vogel. He can't catch a break.
Well, they've just had a disastrous front office. I think Rob Hennigan was a terrible GM. But that's, you know, I think one of the things you're seeing right now is the West and East are kind of both in this weird spot. But in the East, for a long time, you could run your team very poorly and still make the playoffs.
Right, that's true. And
I think that has kind of caught up with them. I think, like Orlando, they were in the finals with Dwight Howard, but that team, even the team that made the finals, wasn't that good. Dwight was Dwight Howard.
No, it wasn't that good. That's a very good point, too. You know what's interesting that you say that? The East has gotten more competitive, and it really has, yet All-Stars got shipped out of there. Paul George, Carmelo Anthony, Jimmy Butler, all sent to the West. No one really came over to replace them. And all of a sudden, getting rid of those guys, now it's pretty competitive, actually. 1 through 9 is competitive, I should say.
Yeah, I think so. It's the first time that, like, those last couple of playoff spots in the East have actually been decent teams in years.
Yeah,
I think you've seen the Bucks kind of take it to a new level. I am interested in what the Pistons are trying to do. I'm not sure I understand it, but they seem like they understand it.
Well,
that's interesting to me.
See, I got an idea what's happening in Detroit. They went after Blake Griffin because instead of going after a free agent, they went and got him because they got him for 4 years. They can afford that. And even though it didn't work out this year, they can reset because let's not forget they lost their point guard early in the season. That was a horrific injury. He might be back. He might not. They get a point guard this summer and they're going to have some cap space to do it. That would be a good team.
Yeah. And I think that's also a team that, like, you know, they have that new arena. It made a lot of sense for them to get a big player and try to just make the playoffs and fill up their new arena. You know, I think that's
Andre Drummond's not a big enough player for them.
Well, no, it's Detroit, man. That's a town. That's a team with a proud history.
A real proud history. The Bad Boys.
Yeah, the Bad Boys. You got Rasheed, Tayshaun, Rip Hamilton, Chauncey years. I mean, they've got a long history of being a really good basketball team, and they're not gonna. I mean, those fans know garbage basketball when they see it.
Yeah, they're not too big fans of the garbage. That's for sure. What else did you learn about the NBA this year, Kevin?
The other thing I learned about the NBA is that Sam Presti is very overrated.
Oh, really? Are you sure? You've heard me say this more than once. Yeah.
And I believed you. I just, this has really kind of reinforced it for me. I mean, I think every time he makes a move and it's like, oh, he was able to get Paul George for Sabonis and Oladipo, and look at how was he able to do that and just fleece the Pacers, and then it's like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
The Thunder don't know how to play offense still, and the Pacers are actually good.
Well, and here's the thing, the Knicks are better too, and if Kristaps didn't get hurt, they may have made the playoffs. Because Cantor's not bad. I mean, he tries again. That's a good thing. The McDermott kid, he was just the extracurricular for to make the deal happen. And he's going to be okay in Dallas, I think. They like guys like him there who can shoot the ball a little bit, play a little defense, be like a crowd favorite. You know, that 15th guy off the bench, that's a good thing. But Sam Presti's the worst GM in basketball. And I'm going to tell you why. No, I'm going to tell you why. It's not because I hate the Thunder.
It's not good. He's not worse than Chris Wallace. I'm not going to let you get away with that.
Well, I don't consider Chris Wallace a GM anymore, so I fired him already, remember? But here's the thing. Here's the thing, though. Well, actually, you fired him first. I disagreed with you completely, of course. The thing with Sam Presti is they always talk about him and Neil Olshey, too. They always talk about these two guys. Well, they're impeccable drafts. Yeah, they're impeccable at choosing guys who are pretty much shoo-ins to come in. You know, it's pretty hard to draft Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, and James Harden. I mean, yeah, okay. But here's the thing. If he really knew basketball, he would have realized that James Harden was going to be very good, and he wouldn't have sold him for a bag of chips.
Yeah, that's that trade
is ruined their friend, ruined a dynasty. That was going to be a dynasty there.
Yeah, it really did. I mean, I still don't understand that trade. You're going to choose over Ibaka, right? Like, they chose to trade Harden instead of trading Ibaka.
Well, look what they ended up with. All those guys are gone, Kevin. There's only one of them left, and they're still bad. So what does that tell you? If it were me, I would have gotten rid of was Russell Westbrook, because no one wants to play with him. You can see the body language. I know Carmelo a bit, and he ain't happy. And I don't know Paul George is that well, or hardly at all. And you can see he's not happy either. The only one that's happy is Russell, because Russell's still going out there getting his triple doubles. They're still drawing plays so he can get those. Because you see, this NBA has these hustle stats. Steven Adams has so many box outs. Everyone talks about that. Why does he have them? Well, he doesn't have the rebounds to back up those box outs. That's because he's boxing out for Russell.
Right.
He ain't boxing out for his numbers. He's boxing out for Russell. And
it's so blatant.
But he doesn't know how to put together a roster. Neither does Neil Olshey in Portland. Same thing. These guys, you know, they're just really good at convincing you that they know what they're talking about. And then you see the reality there, and you just go, wow, it's amazing. But you know what? It's pretty easy to be a bad GM and keep your job. But if you're a bad coach, you go. But who hired the coach? The GM did. They all should go.
Yep. Couldn't agree more.
I'm serious. That's a good one. I'm glad that you finally saw that, Kevin, really.
You know, I always thought I don't really buy into the whole, like, the GM is a genius thing. I didn't buy into it with Hinkie, didn't buy into it with Presti. But, you know, I did think that he was able to make good moves. And, you know, the more I look at it, they should have just kept Oladipo and Sabonis, you know?
Well, they couldn't, because they can't. But here's the thing, though. He couldn't play alongside Westbrook, because it's hard to play alongside Westbrook. That's why Kevin Durant left.
Yeah, nobody can play alongside him. I mean, it's...
Well, how do you play with him? And you know, do you remember Serge Ibaka a couple seasons ago? He said, it's pretty frustrating when you're on the floor for 8 minutes, busting your backside, playing defense, and not get one touch in 8 minutes. He goes, you don't believe me? Go look at the stats. Yeah. He was right.
He's absolutely right.
And you can't win with that kind of stuff. But that's interesting that you brought that up. And for me, the whole thing is the NBA is just inconsistent. And I knew that, but this year it kind of reinforced that. And then I just was really disappointed that they messed with the Bulls. You know, Fred Hoiberg's had nothing but difficulties. They forgot or didn't seem to remember that the Chicago Bulls traded away Taj Gibson, and they traded away Jimmy Butler, and they traded away bought out Dwayne Wade and Derrick Rose. They traded all on Fred Hoiberg's watch. So what is he supposed to do this year? And they were competing a little bit. Plus, he's got these kids. He already knows what Justin Holiday can do and Robin Lopez can do. But what he doesn't know is what can Denzel Valentine do and David Nwaba do. And these guys, that's what you do.
Yeah, I was really impressed by Nwaba last night, by the way.
Oh, yeah. He's a good player. I'm telling you, but the NBA shouldn't be interfering. And I guess the only reason they're not interfering with the Memphis Grizzlies is because the Grizzlies know how to lose and keep it close.
They do that.
They're good.
They're
going to
win one someday. They'll win a game before the end of the year, right?
Man, I don't know. You know, I was doing this thing because I'm writing at Sonics Rising again. And, I was talking about the playoffs a little bit in the bubble teams, and Memphis didn't come up in any of that. But honestly, let's look at
more.
I don't even pull up the schedule anymore when we talk about them. I don't even look at it because this is no point. But let's do this. Let's end the show with this little schedule riser, and we'll talk about the rest of this stuff next week because we have things to talk about Tuesday. Let's see what they have left. Let's see. You say they're going to win a game. Holy crap. There's a lot of red numbers, red L's there. Okay.
Yeah, it's bad.
So here we go. Friday night, Utah.
Loss.
Dallas.
They might be Dallas.
That's on Saturday at Dallas, so they have to travel late Friday night. Monday, March the 12th, Milwaukee Bucks at home.
They'll lose that.
Bulls Thursday night at home.
They'll lose that.
Denver Saturday night at home.
They'll lose that too.
Monday at Brooklyn.
They'll probably lose that too.
Yeah, but if they don't, Brooklyn will cover. They're playing at home. Keep that in mind, folks. They are really good at they cover at home.
The thing I didn't realize until last night, the Grizzlies have not won a road game in 2018.
That is kind of that is telling, isn't it? But I would say that they it's because the teams were better than them. But then again, every team in the NBA is better than them this year. Okay, Wednesday, the 21st, Philadelphia at Philadelphia.
That's a loss.
At Charlotte Thursday night.
That's a loss. They always lose at Charlotte.
Saturday, back home against the Los Angeles Lakers.
That's going to be a race to the bottom.
Yeah, that might be a good window for, and it's at home too, folks. And if you want to come and see the Grizzlies win a game, that might be the only chance you're going to get the rest of the season, because then they have Minnesota. They're not going to beat Minnesota with or without Jimmy Butler. What about Portland at home, the 28th of March?
Nah.
They're playing like, that team is playing defense like I've never seen.
Utah. But nobody's going to defend Lillard or McCollum, so.
No. Or Nurkic, for that matter, because you watch Gasol sit that night. Friday the 30th of March at Utah.
No, that's a loss.
Sunday, April Fool's Day at Portland.
Another loss.
Yeah, sure. Wednesday, April 4th at New Orleans.
That's a loss. The way Anthony Davis is playing, they're going to lose by 40.
Yeah, but he's going to miss a week with a sprained ankle. It might be longer. He had an MRI, but it was negative today. Friday night, April the 6th, at home, Zach Randolph comes back. Sacramento.
Yeah, they might win that one.
Tickets for $5. Go watch Zebo play, because I'm sure David Yeager will let him play. And then Sunday, the last home game of the season, Kevin, the Pistons are in town.
Think about taking Juliet to that one. That's the only 2:30 game all year long. They won't win that one either, especially if the Pistons are trying to make the playoffs.
She's looking forward to going to her first game?
Yeah.
Oh, I think that's great, man. Make sure you take a picture and send it. I think she's such a nice girl. Monday, April the 9th at Minnesota.
Nah.
And then Wednesday night, April 11th at the Blunder.
No, they'll lose that one too. So that's two maybe wins.
Yeah, that's tough.
It's a 21 season, man.
So essentially, we're going to be close to show number 100 by then. Folks, here's what we got to do. We need some help coming up with some ideas for show number 100 of the most popular Memphis Grizzlies show out there. Help us out. You know where to find us at memphisflyer.com. We want to thank Memphis Flyer for presenting the show. Kevin, great stuff today. What a crazy show.
It's been such a crazy season. It's really falling apart here at the end.
It is. All of us are. I promise I'll pull it together and I'll get a little wild because I'll be back in my studio next week. For Kevin Leip, I'm Phil Nasons. Thanks for listening to Beyond the Arc.